John Breaker One. This is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. Don't miss our live show on Thursdays, but for now, you've got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, your weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-host, Steve. What do you hear? What do you say, bud?
Boy, we are going to be talking more pointy ears than a Dr. Spock convention
you
tonight.
Are not kidding, buddy. You are really not kidding. We have a lot to go through. And, you know, I got to tell you, though, I've actually been looking forward to the show since we kind of came up with the concept of it, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got a personal request tonight.
You're kidding.
I mean, you're not kidding.
You're still taking requests? No, this isn't going to get us thrown out of somewhere again, is it?
Will you stop?
What are you talking about? I'm just asking you a question.
I have a personal request from our buddy Rob.
That guy owes me money.
He owes a lot of people money. Are you kidding me?
All right.
You shake hands with that guy, you better count your fingers.
Oh, I got to tell you, man, last time I shook his hand, I lost my wristwatch. You know, he came up to me one time. You know, he knew my wallet was missing before I actually lost it.
Well, he has requested that I do not mention Shroom Nose the Cavern King or my Rocka Tragus at all throughout the entire show. He says he's tired of hearing about the trolls. He doesn't want to hear anything. This is an exclusive elf show.
How do you and Rob know about that nickname?
Now that's personal, pal. I told you that happened in Vegas, and it wasn't my fault.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that whole Shroom Nose with the Cavern King. That was $500 and a visit to a local priest. I mean, that was a heck of an evening.
Will you stop? Keep
all
rolling.
Right. We do. We got actually a pretty good show lined up. But we got a lot of stuff to go over. We got in the news. We got Shadespire Warband, the Morgox Crushes. Those guys are going to be back in, and then we also got some Age of Sigmar Soulbound. This is that new RPG. Have you heard about this one, Steve?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, this is a new RPG. There's been a map revealed for that thing that we want to get into. And back in the news is Warcry, and that's because of that FAQ that dropped earlier this week. So we're going to be getting into that. And we're going to be starting off our talk with the elves with the Venari Dawnriders. So I've been really looking forward to that. But you know what's funny is can you believe where we are right now in the hobby, in the game, and it seems like we've been kind of waiting a long time for elves. Even though we have the Daughters of Cain, even though we have the Cities of Sigmar, even though we have the Iden of the Deepkin, does it kind of seem like we're still waiting, or is that just me?
Well, yeah, I kind of agree with you to a certain degree. We have Marathi. She's one of the, you know, elven wannabe gods.
Right.
You know, we have the Iden of the Deepkin, but when you really think about it, who is the most significant character after Sigmar and like Nagash? It's Teclis.
Yeah, right.
And now we are finally getting the, you know, what people refer to as quote unquote the real elves, you know, the high elves.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And now it's just a matter of when they're coming out. You know, is it going to be in a couple months? Is it going to be, you know, in the summer? We don't know yet.
Yeah, but your speculation was that these guys were going to be out sometime. You know, early summer, right?
I think they're dropping in April. I think that's when they're dropping.
No kidding.
After Adepticon.
So you think that's going to be part of this big reveal we've been hearing about at Adepticon?
I think they're going to reveal the High Elves completely at Adepticon, or at least a good chunk of them. And then I think we're getting them late April, early May.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see, but I'll hold you to that, man. And if you're wrong, I'm going to make fun of you. No, it's I'm hoping
you make
you're
fun
right.
of me anyways.
I just need more reasons, man. I just need more reasons. And as always, folks, we've got the question of the day and the closing thought towards the end of the show.
Hey, you Grimdark goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast.
If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
We're going to get right into this, Steve. I think we owe it to everyone just to get right into the news. But you know, before we get started, I honestly, Steve, I got to tell you, I am very happy to be doing the show right now. I really needed a break.
Then why is that, my friend?
I needed a break from real life. You know what I mean? Did you have a good day today? How was your day?
Wait. You want a break from real life? You want to talk about a bunch of crappy, I mean, a bunch of wonderful elves?
Yeah, tell me about it. But did you have a good day today?
I had a great day today.
Well, you know, let me tell you something. You can't trust everything that's been written on a bathroom wall. I'm telling you.
Will you stop?
Well, first of all, let me just say this. Sharon is not interested in a good time. I mean, she was really pissed when I called.
Oh, my good Lord. Will you stop and move this conversation forward?
Steve, that was
wrong with you.
That was an awkward phone call, I'm telling you. But, yeah, so I think we probably should stick with the news. I think that's fairly safe. So,
yeah.
We're going to start off the news kind of with what we talked about in last week's show. We kind of talked about the battalions with the orcs in the White Dwarf, number 451. Remember that one?
Yes. Yeah. And we were talking about, how we need some bone splitters.
That's right. And
as I recall.
Yep. And it looks like right now that GW has delivered. We got this new orc warband release that just came out. And you know, it's made a lot of, I don't know how to really put this, but it's made
what's
a lot
wrong
of.
With it? It's got brutes. We finally have brutes.
We do. We finally have brutes. And you know what's cool? I don't know if you saw this, but they have the new. Let me turn the sound off there. But they have the new, video here that I'm playing here for everybody. But I this is funny because. These are going to be the new Shadespire Warband. These were the ones that were revealed in the New York Toy Fair that we talked about in our last show. And these guys are the Morgox Crushes. And they're basically, like you said, they're three Iron Jaw Orcs.
I love these names.
I know. You know,
you cannot have a bad Orc or Gloom Spite name.
No, you really can't. And, you know, it's funny. I go back and forth with who has the better name, Nurgle, Orcs. I'm torn like an old sweater, but
yeah, it's a tie.
You know, to me, in looking at these models, they're nice. You know, I like the poses. And they're, I would say, a very good alternate for brute units in an Iron Jaws army.
Oh,
but
great.
But that's just it. I got a sinking feeling that these guys are going to be just for match play. You know, in other words, Age of Sigmar games, not really favored for Beastgrave. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I can tell you this. I don't know how it is at other stores, but I have never walked into a GW store or one of our independent stores that we, you know, frequent. I have never walked in and seen a game of this particular game being played. Now, that could be just coincidence. I'm not saying that makes it a bad game or that it's not popular. It could be very popular at other stores.
Exactly.
But I have yet to see a game of this played. But I always see these little mini units being used in other people's armies.
And that's why, yeah, I'm right there with you. And that's why I said that. Again, I'm not in any way denigrating, you know, Beastgrave at all. But, you know, I say this because, first of all, these look to me very similar to the Iron Skulls. And I would have preferred, I guess, in a very, you know, narrow-minded way, I would have preferred some more Lizardmen or some Fish Elves rather than just more Orcs. And I guess, you know, with the Iron Skulls being out of print, you know, if you wanted to use some orcs, this is the first good option. But I guess for me, you know, like I'm sure everyone else, we didn't really want more orcs for any game, much less, you know, Beastgrave.
Well,
so,
you know, if you remember when the Gloomspite Gits were released, shortly afterwards, you saw Mullug.
Right. Yep.
His Mullug's mob. So they're kind of releasing relevant underworld units as they release, you know, the books. And if you think about it, the Orc book was only released a couple months ago.
True.
So it's
yeah.
not
yeah
it's
you're
not
right
like it's not like this unit being released now is so far off.
Yeah, and you know, again, they're still orcs, so you're going to get a good bang for your buck and a good bang for your point cost in the games. I mean, in the game, and I'm talking about, you know, Beastgrave here, folks, as in one of our last shows, we spoke about the Worm Spat, and which, again, going back to Nurgle, the Worm Spat, you know, whose names are better? These guys are literally going to be a 180-degree turn from the Worm Spat, I think. To kind of use some references here from Beastgrave Underworlds, the Beast Orc attack damage is going to be 3. It's going to roll 2 dice looking for swords, but every hammer is going to give them +1 damage. They also have an inspired roll where they get to roll 3 dice. This gets the cleave and the second scything attack. The other orc rolls the same number of dice, but they hit on hammers for 2 damage, I believe, and the bonus of +1 damage happens on the sword rolled. So, you know, you're still going to get. I mean, these guys are still coming at you. They're still going to get right up into your grill, and they're gonna fight you. And that's what orcs do. So they still have that aesthetic, and I'm sure that's going to be a big draw to the people that actually do play Underworlds. But again, the poses I think are going to be more popular in the actual game of Age of Sigmar. My thought.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah. And, you know, I they also have something called Knockback. Now, folks, you know, I'm not a big player of Beastgrave Underworlds. I kind of know it from a 5,000-foot view. But they also have their Knockback, I guess, is also possible. But it's not going to be dominant in this team for sure. So these are just some of the things that I'm hearing from people on the boards and some of the research that I've done on the game. But you know what's funny? Speaking of my research, Steve, that I've been doing on the boards, you know, in particular with anything that comes out with, you know, from GW, a lot of folks were hoping that the new orcs were going to be bone splitters to some degree. And I understand it. I really do. But there are a lot of people that are orc players are disappointed in this. And I think they would have better of fit. I mean, meaning bone splitters. I think the bone splitters would have fit better with the Beastgrave theme as bone splitters. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that bone splitters are eventually going to get their own little group, but it may be further down the road. But I don't think GW is really worried too much about orcs right now. It's not one of their primary armies.
You know, it's funny. I think you're right. And we'll get to what we think their primary army might be here in a little bit, I think. But I like orcs. But I can see why someone can think that they're boring. They aren't as special as, say, Molog or some of the other bands. I mean, I really think, in my opinion, I think the Goblin Riders on the Wolves or maybe Molog are probably my personal favorites. And again, I think Oryx have been unfairly saturated in the game. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I think the biggest problem with Oryx is that they're kind of a single-minded force. I mean, it's like playing versions of Gloomspite. You know, you're going forward, you're smashing, you're bashing, and, you know, that's how you get the job done. And then there's armies where you actually, you know, have to have a little bit more strategy involved. And I'm not saying that Oryx don't require strategy, because believe me, they do, especially now with the new book.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
But orcs have any destruction army has traditionally been go forward, smash and bash, break through the enemy line, claim right. The objective.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But, you know, moving beyond this deliverable here, I do hope we see an Idoneth warband, maybe a Lizardman warband. And here's one for you. Here's one for you, Steve. You're sitting down with this one, a vampire warband in the future.
Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah, I figured that would be, to me, it would just make sense. It's kind of a dark, gloomy setting. You got to have a couple of vampires running around.
Well, what'll be interesting is to see what does GW envision a vampire to look like in this new world?
Oh, yeah.
Are we going to get the gothic vampire, or are we going to get something new?
What would you like
to
see?
We've already gotten, you know, the FEC, but I want to see what GW is going to do with the traditional gothic vampire.
Yeah, but my question to you is, what do you want to see?
I want to see the traditional gothic vampires.
Okay.
Now, I'm not opposed to seeing some kind of new version of a vampire, but I want them to be at least somewhat closely related to your traditional gothic, you know, Universal Studios, Dracula kind of vampire.
Yeah,
that's what I
got
I want.
Bela Lugosi, right. Gotcha.
You got it.
And you know, and maybe there'll be a demon war band out there somewhere. You know, that'd be great too, I think.
Why not?
You know what? I would love it. I would love it.
But people have to understand, though, this game is still young.
It's very much so.
In its second season?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty
so,
much.
So, I mean, you know, give GW a chance. I mean, this is not their primary game.
No.
So, I mean, to anyone out there, I would say, you know, be patient.
I would say
game just got started.
I would say in a way, and folks, we're kind of digressing here a little bit, but I would say in a way that that even Warcry has kind of, you know, eclipsed this a little bit. But we can get into the reasons for that here in a little bit.
I think that you're being generous there. I think Warcry has absolutely killed Underworlds.
Interesting. Wow. Well, maybe these would be good models to use in Warcry, you know, for those war bands. Anyhow, folks, Morgox Crushes are going to be coming soon to Games Workshop. And yes, they're going to have rules for Warhammer Age of Sigmar too. So, you know, kind of looking out for that. And I'm sure there's a bunch of Orc players out there that are really happy lately. You know, they get this deliverable this week. Last week, they had some great news on their battalions. And just it's a good time, I think, to be an Orc player. Right?
I agree.
So, but moving on, we've got a pretty big topic in the news here. The FAQs just dropped again, and it looks like Warcry was the latest turnabout in the what do you want to call it, the FAQ cycle, you know.
Sure.
that we've been we've been hearing about. And so Warcry, yeah, it got an update, and there have been quite a few changes to go over. Now I'm going to kind of go through this from a 5,000 foot level, folks. I'm sure this has been out now for a little while, and if you guys want to see more about this, you can head over to the Warhammer community site, and you'll get more information on that. But starting off, the warbands are going to operate on a new table of how they earn and spend glory points, and I'm kind of showing this this table here on the screen. And of course, for you folks who are going to be joining us later on the podcast, you're not going to be able to do that, but, you know, listen to the show, have fun with it anyways, and then come on over to YouTube. But also here's some other updates. If you're a Flesh Eater Quartz player, the leader rune mark also got swapped to the elite rune mark. As for Nighthaunt, the Chilling Horde ability was also reworded. So you're going to want to check into that. It's kind of wordy, and I think Nighthaunt players are going to want to pay attention to that. The Squig Herders points changed along with the Lodsa arrows for the Bone Splitters. So it's kind of a hodgepodge of changes that they kind of it appears to me that they wanted to get these FAQ and these erratas out to everybody as fast as possible. So there is a little bit of digesting, I think, that has to happen here when you're reading through what amounts to be, you know, I think what, 5-6 pages of FAQ just for, you know, a fairly young game. And as I said, folks, the FAQ is somewhat jumbled as far as faction coverage goes. However, the Claw Leader for Skaven had its points changed, and the Rat Ogre's wounds were also tweaked a little bit. So some good stuff there. It's not all bad. You just, you know, I would just caution everyone to kind of, you know, spend a little bit of time with this. So, while all these are solid changes, perhaps one of the biggest developments is the new Monster and Ally Allegiance table. Are you kind of familiar with this one, Steve?
No, I'm not a Warcry guy.
Well, have you heard about the, I mean, obviously they have the new updated, the book that came out maybe about a month and a half ago.
Monsters now in the game. Yeah, that I think is really cool.
Yeah, so
make the games look neat.
I got to tell you, I kind of expected this with Warcry because, maybe it wasn't a month or so, but maybe it was 2 months ago now. They released a book called Monsters and Mercenaries, and this really had a lot to do with the with what we're talking about here, with allying in armies monsters to your army. And one of the things they've done here is a very nice even spread over what you can do as far as allying with the regular warbands in Warcry. Basically what I'm saying here, folks, is now everybody gets to bring, you know, a big bad monster in their army, which I think is going to spice up the game. But I think there's some other tweaks that they're making. Have you kind of heard about some of the tweaks that they've kind of, some of the cheese or some of the things that they're bringing into Warcry yet, Steve?
No, I haven't heard too much about it. Like I said, it's not a game that I traditionally follow, but we have so many guys in our group that have dabbled in it and are probably going to be very happy with what you're about to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And looking at the allies between other warbands, I guess in 40K, they would call it soup. Here, maybe in our world, we call it cheese, or maybe those terms are interchangeable. I'm not really sure. But what it looks like is that the cheese or the soup is going to be hitting Warcry pretty hard. And when I was on the boards, kind of looking over some of the information, to kind of research this for the show, I came across one fan pointed out on the Warhammer Age of Sigmar Facebook page that the level of cheese or soup that we might be seeing in our game soon is going to be pretty startling. He basically said that it's going to be interesting to see what players' warbands are going to look like in the near future, as this level of soup or cheese, as he was saying, is definitely something that a Warcry player didn't have access to when the base game first dropped. And I think what they're referring to is one of the other comments that was mentioned was that one person stated that they can now play legally their Kornite heroes and their Dark Oath War Queen along with some Skaven. So you can kind of see where they're really kind of swelling the game up to a very to almost a very very competitive level, I think. Right? They're intertwining it with match play, I think, in a way.
Well, I think they understand that Warcry so far is doing well for them, so they're going to stick with it and they're going to keep adding to it. Remember, they supposedly have this 3-year plan for that game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How much
good memory
support it beyond that 3-year mark, we don't know. But I guarantee you, if the game catches on and becomes popular, it will definitely be a staple of the fantasy world.
Yeah, yeah, you're not kidding. You're not kidding. And but yeah, I mean, more to come on that. I think it's a good thing. I think people sometimes just like to unnecessarily complain. But again, the only thing that I would, my takeaway on this is when you're reading through this the 6-page FAQ here, just give it some time. Grab a cup of coffee or something and just sit down and really read through this, because if you're a diehard, because I do know that there's a pretty big group of diehard Warcry folks out there, and
absolutely.
They're going to want to make sure that they give this thing a good once or twice over for sure. But yeah, that's Warcry in the news, a new FAQ that drops.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing, or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. Rolling along, we got our third topic here in the news. And this one here, I'm actually pretty excited about, and I'm going to get to kind of some of my reasons on that. Have you heard of this yet? This new RPG, this Soulbound from.
Yes, now I have. Yes.
Okay. Well, a group that calls themselves Cubicle 7. This is the team that is working on the Age of Sigmar pen and paper RPG called Soulbound. and it was revealed that there's going to be a new map that I'm showing here, the Great Parch, this new map that that they're going to be using in the game. Now, for some background on what this RPG is, the story basis of this RPG is about the Great Parch, which has stood at the center of many of the greatest events in Akshi's history. So I think it's neat that they're tying in one of the Mortal Realms from our game, from our Age of Sigmar game, into this this RPG.
And you know what's interesting about that too is that Akshi is such a prolific realm in this game. There is, there's so much history that takes place in that particular realm. It's kind of like they're almost ignoring some of these other realms right now until their accompanying armies come out for them. Like Olgu, we haven't heard too much other than, you know, Daughters of Cain. But it's just amazing how, like, Gyron and Akshi and all these, like, those two main realms that we always hear about have been in the news so much.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how that's going to change as these new books come out. Like, we're probably going to hear more about Haish.
I hope so. I hope so, because, you know, I think it's tying all this together. But what's interesting about this RPG, the Soulbound RPG that's being done by Cubicle 7, is what's nice about this is it, you can kind of see that Games Workshop is kind of going after that that role playing that Dungeons & Dragons that D&D crowd a little bit. They're looking
it's
at that.
Smart move.
Well, because you remember back in the day, right? I mean, you played the Warhammer RPG at one time, didn't you?
Yes, centuries ago. But it was very fun. A lot of people had fun with it. But the problem is, like any, you know, good group, D&D kind of group, it's hard to keep people together. Work schedules, you know, people's lives, most of those things fall apart. But if it's something that can be done like in a night, like a single night, just play, you know, get put together some characters and play in a night, I think it would be great.
Right. Right, right. Well, you know, I hope it does take off, because what I've noticed about this, and I've been kind of tracking this and kind of watching this for a few months now, you know what's interesting is there's a real small but yet fanatical group of people in our Warhammer community that are really into the RPG. And I would dare say
it's mostly the older guys.
Yeah, exactly. And I would dare say that most of these guys, that's all they play. They don't play the match play. They don't play the old rank and flank still. This is what they've played.
Well, if you bought the book years ago, you'd be fine. I mean, you wouldn't need to buy anything else, really.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I like this. And I like the creativity of this. I like the fact that these people, because you don't really see this much anymore in Age of Sigmar, this level of creativity, this level of initiative that these people are taking. I mean, this map is actually very, very cool. I mean, it's very well done.
If there's one thing that any D&D player will tell you, is that they want information and lots of it.
Right.
They want maps. They want details. I mean, you go into some D&D modules like back in the day, and they would tell you the population of the city. They would tell you, you know, what are the main trades in that city. I mean, it was just incredible, the level of detail.
Right.
So if Warhammer or Games Workshop is going that route, it's the smart move. Why would you ever cede a portion of the hobby to another company when you know you could take some of that business?
Well, and we know that one thing that GW is good, you know, two things GW are good at: coming out with models and taking business. They're very good at both of those things. But going back to this, the story basis of this RPG is the Great Parch, like I was saying, and it is the starting realm, I guess, for Soulbound. The core book, they're saying there's going to be a core book, and apparently they're saying it's going to come with an overview of each of the other mortal realms. So that kind of kicks back into what you were saying, Steve, as far as, you know, maybe we'll get a look at these other realms, as well as, I guess, there's going to be maybe up to 30 pages of information on various locations in the Great Parch. So one of the things I thought was interesting about this is they're saying that apparently those who have played Seasons of War Firestorm are going to recognize the Prismatican and the Titanworks in the Flamescar Plateau. So that's going to be meaningful to a group of people. And I think that's also that type of connection, I think, is going to draw people into this game even more, if there's that associative piece. Not to mention, the map was created by a renowned cartographer by the name of Jared Blondo. So
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, it really just is amazing. But
I'll get the book definitely just to find out what this world looks like. Like I said, more details, more info.
Exactly. And you know what? That's probably going to make you a better gamer on the tabletop. But, you know, folks, for more information, you can go to cubicle7.com. And check them out there. They've got their own Facebook and website, and they also are on Twitter. So I believe you can get them at Cubicle7 if you want. So definitely check these guys out, support them. I don't really know much more about the Cubicle 7 group, but other than the fact that they are some talented people for sure. So exciting, exciting stuff. But we're winding down the news, and we're coming to another pretty damn good topic here. And this is on a tournament that's very near and dear to my heart, and that's Armed Forces Day 2020. This is going to be our third year for this 100% charity event to support our active duty troops. Armed Forces Day, this tournament is going to be held May 16th and 17th, and you can head over to grimdarklive.com to check out the information on this tournament. Armed Forces Day 2020 is going to be a two-day Age of Sigmar event where each player can bring up to 2,000 points of an army comprised from the most recent General's Handbook and Age of Sigmar rule set. This event is going to be a 1v1, five-game, two-day tournament to provide donations to our active duty troops while celebrating Armed Forces Day, a national holiday to honor those active duty troops. But in addition, we are also going to be honoring the Marines of the Montford Point Marine Association Chapter 2. There's also going to be a separate raffle to support this historic Southside Chicago Montford Point Marine Chapter after a half a century of being the home to those first African-American Marines who settled in Chicago after the war. I believe it was 1946. The chapter faces looming debt with potential for closure. So we gotta make sure we do not.
Yeah, that cannot happen.
Exactly. And you know what's funny? Another cool thing that we're going to be adding to the event here is players in the Armed Forces Day 3 will be able to use, in addition to their 2,000-point match play army, one free warband from Underworld's Beastgrave or the original Underworld's games. Limit one warband only. And this warband must be of the same Grand Alliance. So, you know, order, chaos, destruction, or death of the particular player's army. No proxies, please. Warbands must be actual to the game of Warhammer Underworlds or in Warhammer Underworlds Beastgrave. And must have match play points as listed and published by Games Workshop. Legal warbands can be found on the Warriors of Beastgrave website. This is going to be a primer for the upcoming Midwest Meltdown, which, you know, I do want to point this out. Armed Forces Day would really like to thank all the guys and girls, the folks over at Midwest Meltdown, in particular, James Hyde, a.k.a. Domus, for the great idea. This was actually their idea. They actually decided to do this first over at Midwest Meltdown. And I asked Domus if he would allow me to do that. He said, absolutely, no problem. And we're kind of treating this as a primer for Midwest Meltdown, which we're going to be there this year. I am really looking forward to this tournament. Yeah, there's going to be
crews turning out.
I hope you don't get us thrown out this year again, Steve. I mean, we got reputations to uphold here, man. You know, I'm just saying, man. You know, even if I wasn't saying, I'd still be kind of saying. But yeah,
did you ever take back that car?
Well, which one? There's two of them. You talking about that one with that stuff in the back? You know, that stuff I asked you to take? Did you get that hole dug, by the way?
Yeah, I dug two. All one right. for the body and one for you.
That's it. But folks, Midwest Meltdown is going to be July 24th through the 26th, 2020. So head over to the Midwest Meltdown Facebook page to sign up or see if there's any available spots, because there might not be. I mean, you know, these tickets go fast. You know what I mean?
It is the premier tournament of the summer.
Right.
I think it's close to 200 people this year that are going to be in the tournament. So it is definitely a who's who of the guys from around the Midwest and even further.
Right.
It's becoming a big tournament, and I imagine that in time it's probably going to be even bigger.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know what? Leave it to those guys. I mean, I think it's already 160 players, I believe. Something like that.
Oh, it's more than that, I believe. I think it's more than that. I think we're closer to 200 this year. But
yeah,
notwithstanding, it is one of the biggest tournaments and one of the biggest events of the summer. And Domus, from what I have heard, puts on a absolutely phenomenal tournament.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm not even surprised by that. I mean, Domus is a great guy, and of course, but folks, I'm telling you right now, I mean, these tickets are going to go fast. I mean, those tickets sell out faster than a Twinkie at a Weight Watchers meeting. I'm telling you, I'm serious.
Stop.
Faster than a Pabst Blue Ribbon at a NASCAR race. You know, I mean, that's fast. You know what I mean, Steve?
I think we get the picture.
Faster than a groom's sex life after he says I do.
Will you stop?
Faster than virginity on a prom night? I mean, these
if
are fast.
If I was there, I'd brain you. Keep moving.
I mean, I'm telling you right now. So also, by the way, for Armed Forces Day 3, all White Dwarf War Scroll battalions released from January 1st, 2019 through May 2nd, 2020 can be used in this tournament. Battalions must have points listed. They must not have been replaced by further introduced battalions and must comply with the Armed Forces Day 3 tournament rules and Games Workshop current standards. And all players using the noted battalions must have the original copy of the published White Dwarf listing said battalion to be used. No copies of the magazine or pages can be allowed.
That's illegal.
Yeah, yeah, and that, and also, I think it's only fair to your opponent to actually, you know, see the real thing. And of course, Armed Forces Day 3 wouldn't be possible at all without the awesome support of GameStorm Gaming. And Frag Factory 3D Printing, but also a new person that or new not person but new group that has stepped in to tip their hat for some prize support is MiniStomp.com. And these guys, I've had some great conversations with these guys, and I got to tell you, if you guys get the opportunity to go over and support the folks over at MiniStomp, I definitely say to do that. Head over to MiniStomp.com to get your game on with those guys. So a real good organization, those guys for sure. So yeah, that's what else? What else you got, man? Anything in the news that you can think of, or are we good to keep rolling on with the show?
I think we've covered it all, at least all that we have right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've had a lot, man. We've actually talked a lot and had some good conversation on the news. So I think it's time to actually move on here and keep rolling with our topic, and that's the pointy ears, man. The Elven armies. You ready?
Let's go.
All right. So, folks, Steve, I'll say this to you, folks, everyone else. We're going to talk about the Elven armies tonight on Grimdark Live, the new, the upcoming, the existing, and how they compare and stand in the meta right now. And that means, you know, folks, the forthcoming Lumineth Realm Lords, currently the Daughters of Cain, the Idoneth Deepkin, and the Cities of Sigmar Elves. And this one, Steve, has kind of got me a little perplexed here, because when we talk about the Cities of Sigmar Elves, we're really looking at the Darkling Covens, Order Serpentis, Shadowblades, the Scourge Privateers, Wanderers, and finally, my personal favorite, the Grim Boys from Gyron, the Phoenix Temple. And is it fair and reasonable to say, Steve, that out of all of the Cities of Sigmar Elves, the Phoenix Temple are the only ones that I believe could make it as a standalone playable army? I mean, I can't really see being successful as a standalone with the other armies. I mean, do you agree?
Somewhat.
Really?
I think that there are a few people out there that are trying to make a go of it with the Dark Elves right now. And that's tough because there's not a whole lot there to work with.
You mean like the Scourge Privateers and all that, right?
Well, like the Black Guard, your Executioners, you know, your sorceresses, your dark shards. I mean, things
the Darkling
like that.
Covens, right.
Yeah, the Darkling Covens. I mean, you're basically, you've got good stuff there. I mean, Black Guard are nothing to sneeze at. They're a damn good unit. The problem is that there's not enough people playing them. So the only faction that you're really seeing a lot of, if any at all, are the Phoenix Guard.
Right. As what I'm saying is, when I say standalone, I mean, that's it. I mean, that's what you're seeing on the table, you know, because you don't really need any mages.
I would say 90% of the time, yeah.
Okay, right. Well, we're going to come back around to them, because I think I've got a pretty cool chart, a pretty cool, you know, piece that I think is going to kind of show where the Elven armies kind of stand in the meta right now. And it even talks a little bit about the Cities of Sigmar, but we're going to get into that. Hey gang, I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs, That's Game Storm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
Game Storm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at Game Storm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at Game Storm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events. So get over there and get your nerd on with Game Storm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, 630-243-9330. Again, that's Game Storm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
Game Storm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there. But let's start with the ones that are apparently, hopefully, right around the corner. GW released new images of the Venari Dawn Riders, basically the High Elf Cavalry. I mean, they're not High Elves, but they're close enough to call them that, I guess. But Steve, what are your thoughts early on with what we've seen already with the Venari Dawn Riders?
Well, we haven't seen too much, but they're beautiful models. I think they are definitely owed to the Silverhelms. They're going to be your fast, light cavalry. They're going to be your flankers. They're going to be your war machine killers. I don't see people taking them in very big units. I think most of the units you're going to see on the table are going to be 5 to 10 at the most. And I think that's exactly what their intended purpose is.
Interesting.
You're not going to see this be the premier unit in the Elf Army. That I can guarantee you.
Well, I don't think so either.
But they're a support unit, and that's what they're meant to be.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of what you said, just about whenever you said it, was you referred to them, I think, as the tip of the iceberg. There's obviously more to come.
We haven't even scratched the surface of what this army looks like.
Right.
We are still waiting on the Swordmasters of Hoth, which we know are going to get some kind of a variation in this edition. We know we have archers coming. We know we have bolt throwers coming. We know we could, and I'm praying that we do, have White Lions coming.
Right.
There are so many other units, I think, that are coming for this game that what we've seen so far is barely the tip of the iceberg.
Okay. All right. I hope you're right, because, I hope this army, because, I've been kind of critical of the Lumineth Realm Lords for a while, and I'm still not necessarily sure how they sit with me. I mean, I'm still referring to them as High Elves. And these new images.
But that's okay, because once again, we've already talked about this before. This is what they're intended to be.
Right.
If you are that traditional classic High Elf player, i.e. you.
Right.
You should be pretty happy with this army. Now, it just depends on what your play style is. I do not believe this army is going to include Tyrion. I think Tyrion's book is coming later.
Yeah, so do I.
And I think he will be like the part two of the Elven Brother gods.
Okay. Yeah, I hope so. But let's go back to this. So what we're looking at here, folks, and what we're talking about is the new images of the Venari Dawn Riders. As I said before, basically the High Elf Cavalry. And we're kind of talking about our thoughts on them and where we think the army is going. I mean, my comments, my thoughts on them right now are honestly, the models are fine, but not spectacular. I mean, I think maybe it's because the horses to me seem a bit bland, I think. I don't know, maybe. Still, it's a nice addition to the Age of Sigmar world as classic High Elves. That faction was kind of missing from it, at least from my perception. And it's just enough of the classic original High Elf Silverhelms, in my opinion, with the right splash of the new faction and setting. I know that a lot of people have been referencing these models as Illyrian Reavers, but I see more of the Silverhelms
I totally
of
agree.
The Highborn. I mean, So speaking of these, this cavalry unit, let's stick with this right here. What do you think their rules will be? I mean, I don't see them being a heavy cavalry a la the Dragon Princes, but you know, maybe something like say the Illyrian Reavers or do you think they'll be like the Silver Helms?
Yeah, they'll have two wounds each. They'll probably have minimal combat ability. They're not going to be designed to be anything other than a flanking unit that's going to go after chaff, go after war machines. I think that is going to be their intended design.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably going to have fairly good armor, like I would guess about a 4-up armor. Because they do look pretty well, you know, they do look pretty well armed, but I still think they're going to be light cavalry and they're going to be fast. I think they're going to have at least a 14-inch movement.
Okay. So you think they're going to be even be faster than even what the Silver Helms or the Illyrian Reaver
are? Oh, I do. I think these are going to be this is going to be your fast move. This is going to be like what we used to refer to in 8th edition as fast cavalry.
Okay. Good. I hope so, because I love a good cavalry army. I think that's why a lot of people miss Bretonians. But before we really go down that rat hole, I'm going to stop talking about that real quick.
We have Bretonians. They're called FEC.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, if I had something to dislike, I guess is the best way to put it, about this army, it would definitely be the banner design.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, truthfully, because just aesthetically, the way that let me just put it this way. I tend to dislike banners anyway, for the most part. And the giant runes on the barding, it just seems like a cheap tattoo to me. I just don't really see. I mean, if you look at it, it almost looks like a cartoon character. I don't really see it looking very authentic. When you think of elves, you think of precision craftsmanship, you think of some very elegant lines, and that just looks like something that came out of like a Far Side cartoon to me. I don't know. It just doesn't. I'm not a big fan of this as I first look at this banner. But you know, that's just a sidebar. Not really worth mentioning much more than that. But the rumor engine that dropped, it reveals something that I found very interesting. Have you seen the rumor engine? The one previous.
The one with the trees in it, like the little trees growing out of the.
Yeah, it's got like that little stone with the little swirlies on it. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I have.
Well, you know, it's funny because this thing to me looks like a floaty, rocky bits, you know, probably the base of some air magic type character that you have to come in. And it's noted in all of the pictures when referencing this particular cavalry unit in this Lumineth Realm Lords army. You can kind of see it in the background. So they're touching on that and they're tying together the rumor engines, which tells me that this is going to be, you know, coming out here pretty, pretty quick, I think. So I think your prediction about early summer, late spring, you actually said April. So even faster than that, early spring,
early May.
All right. I mean, I would love that, but let's keep rolling on this thing here because, you know, Steve, as we get into our further coverage of the elves here, coming off of our conversation with the, you know, yet to be revealed Lumineth Realm Lords, you know, I wanted to bring up an interesting chart that I was referring to for armies, and this chart is as of February 24th. So we're talking just a, you know, a few days ago here.
Yeah.
And as you can see, you know, Daughters of Cain is currently less than 2% of the meta. They're right now as a playable army. They're only 1.86% of the meta, but they have a 57% win rate in the meta. So I think we should start with Daughters of Cain.
Sure. Daughters of Cain are still one of the best armies in the game.
Right.
When I played them, they were probably one of the most devastating armies I've ever used.
And you had a very devastating army.
Yeah, I used all snakes. And right. I know some people, you know, they kind of mix the snakes with the witch elves. I'm not a fan of the witch elves. I always thought the snakes were the better option because they could do the mortal wound attacks. The Daughters of Cain can be one of those armies that hits you so hard, so fast, and so brutally that you don't even know how you lost every model off the table by turn two. That's how vicious they can be.
You know what's what I like about the Daughters of Cain, though, before we get and folks, for anybody that's just joining us, you know, what we're talking about is the Korn Army based on bloodthirsty, fanatical hot chicks and monster girls in bikinis, Daughters of Cain. That's who we're talking about right now. But your army was pretty unique, and Steve, that you ran all snakes, right? But I have seen it. It's almost like chocolate and vanilla, right, where, you know, people prefer the witch elves. But let's keep rolling with you with what you said. I didn't mean to completely cut you off.
Well, sure. I mean, it's just that for me, the snakes were the cooler option. They were the newer option, and they were the best option for that army. And I met with great success playing the army. As a matter of fact, the army won so many games that I eventually just got bored with it and decided to move on to something different.
So you're literally saying you got bored of winning.
Yeah. I don't like any army that has a 90% win rate, to me is broken or is not challenging enough for me as a player. You get lazy when you play an army that's good. When you have an army that's that good, and for me, I want a challenge. I want an army that I know can lose almost half the time.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that you're playing that loser army of trolls. That really,
well,
I'm
to tell you the truth. I mean, it's
not actually, folks. It's a brutal army.
But what you said is true. It is an army that is hit or miss. I know that against certain opponents, I'm in deep trouble. Against other opponents, I'm going to crush them. So I like that because that army always will provide me with a challenge. When I would play my daughters, I don't care what army I was facing. I don't care. Any army you put in front of me with the daughters, I'm good.
Yeah.
And that the fact that I wasn't worried when I played them bothered me.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting perspective. And, you know, maybe on another show, I'd like to get into that a little bit about the psychology of that kind of army. I think that might be a good one to get into here in the next maybe show or two down the road. But I think what's kept Daughters of Cain in such high success. Now, again, folks, we're talking about an army that's got a 57% major GT or GT win in the meta. But again, only less than 2% represented. But I think whether it's the All Snake or Daughters or the Witch Elf type of build, I think what keeps this army successful, and I've said it 1,000 times, speed kills. And there's plenty of movement tricks in this army. I mean, I'm going to go back to this here, Steve. Regardless of your opinion, your basic troops, Witch Elves and Sisters of Slaughter, they literally have the ability to run and charge with only a musician, everything else except the heroes and the Cauldron of Blood, or the, you know, the Blood Rack Shrine, I guess, also have movement of anywhere between 8 to 14 inches, and you can reroll ones to run on turn one and then ones to charge on turn two. Plus you can deep strike Canary and Celebron's deep striking ability also. And of course, in the lore of shadow spells that really just are going to boost your movement.
Oh,
so
yeah. If I get off Mind Razor with snakes, whatever's in front of me, put them in a box.
So right now, Steve, let me ask you this. What is your take on the Daughters of Cain right now as they stand?
They're an army that I could, because I love the lore of the army and because I still am in love with that army in many ways. It's an army I could easily go back to, and I think it's an army that will always be in that 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 category.
Okay.
I don't see this army falling in the meta anytime soon.
No.
They're going to be in the top 10 for a long ways to come.
Yeah, I agree with that. So let's talk about your army here for a second, you know, with your personal experience with this, because I think this is going to help craft everyone's understanding of why this army is currently sitting fourth in the meta, and as being the fact that it's not a young army, but it's not an old one either. So
yeah, that's fair.
In your Daughters of Cain army, you had a secret sauce in the cauldron, and folks, what I'm gonna, you know, kind of let Steve explain here. Now, to me, and I played against that army a lot. I lost against that army a lot. A lot of people still talk about that army, but explain to everybody the secret sauce in that cauldron that you had in that build.
Yeah, I mean, I had various lists that I used. One of my favorites was the Temple Nest. You basically have a Blood Rack Shrine with a Medusa on top. You arm her with the Ignex Scales. So not only does she have a 5-up armor, she has a 5+ devoted disciples save. She has a 4+ ward save. And then if you put the blessing of Cain on her, she's getting a 5x5x5x4.
Yeah, that's what I used to call affectionately the again and again.
The again and again, yeah. Yep. And you now, most of the time, I would take the blessing of Cain with one of my hags who had the iron circlet, so she gets to reroll any failed prayer.
Right.
And I would put that prayer on my frontline snake unit, my 20 snake unit.
Okay.
I had two of them.
Yeah, I remember
and then
that.
I would have, this is my temple nest list, I would have two 20-man units of snake. A 5-man unit of snakes or a 5-woman unit. And then I would have two five woman units of stalkers, the archers.
Right.
And then I, of course, had to pay for the Temple Nest Battalion. The thing that made this army so nasty is that when someone rolled a 1 when they were attacking you,
right,
they take a mortal wound.
Yikes.
So
yeah.
Imagine you're a person who's coming up with a bucket of dice and you're trying to attack my snakes. And you roll, let's say, 15 ones. You come up, you have 40 attacks, you roll 10 to 15 ones. That's 10 to 15 mortal wounds you're taking.
Yeah, that's the crystal touch, isn't it?
No, that's the ability of the battalion.
Oh, that's right. The temple that's right. Nest. Yeah, that's yeah, the yeah, yeah, yeah.
And okay. then what makes the Blood Sisters so nasty is that they have the touch, which is a mortal wound. Then they have the crystal touch, and then they have the 3 attacks apiece. Well, now almost every scenario you're in, you're going to have at least 8 to 9 of your snakes in the front row attacking, and you're going to have your snakes in the back attacking because they have a 2-inch range. They would just literally buzzsaw through anything that they hit. Many times I didn't even need the mortal wound attacks. It was just gravy.
Right, right. So folks, you know, kind of to shore up what Steve just said. I mean, the basis of all of that was really the again and again, in my opinion, and the Cauldron of Blood with the right combination of relics and command traits and prayers.
Well, they had the Blood Rack Shrine, but the Cauldron of Blood is just as devastating.
Well, to me, I would say that it's straight busted, or the shrine. I mean, coming in with a nightmarish amount of damage output, you know, both in the shooting and close combat, this thing's got powerful support abilities and the ability to heal itself through multiple avenues. I mean, this thing is what? Whether it's isn't the rack or the cauldron, aren't they like 300 points or something apiece?
No. The Blood Rack Shrine, I believe, is 220. And the cauldron is 300, but the Blood Rack Shrine is very cheap. It's only like 220.
Yeah. What about some allied units? Do you recommend any allied units? To
nope,
put into this
they don't
army.
Need them. Daughters of Cain do not need allies. They've
not even Iden and Thiepken, huh? Well, you wouldn't want to grab some Icelian guard or
why.
Okay.
I can do everything with my daughters that Thiepken can do. Here's the reason I always chose. Here's another reason I chose the snakes over the witch elves.
The bikinis, wasn't it?
Now let's move on.
Okay.
The snakes are a 3x3, rend of 1, damage 1. The witch elves are hit on 3s, but wound on 4s. Ugh, tough.
Yeah.
Now, I know there are things and abilities and spells and all that stuff, but I would rather go with the sure thing. I want to always be hitting on 3x3s. And the snakes offered that opportunity, not to mention the fact the snakes are 2 wounds apiece. So a unit of 20 is 40 wounds. Now, I'm not saying they're invincible. I'm not saying that they can't be beaten, because I have beaten them with my trolls. But I will tell you that if they get to strike first, you're dead.
Right. Yeah. Now, kind of wrapping up here, the Daughters of Cain. You know, I think when I saw that they were, I was personally not shocked that they were 57% win in the meta and that they were fourth place. But what I was shocked about is that they were less than 2% represented in the current community or the meta.
Yeah.
And I think personally is that they're rather expensive to collect in dollars, and even spending lots of money on models can still leave you with, you know, in some cases, like with your army, with all the snakes, a comparatively low model count. I think that's what's holding a lot of folks off. I mean, I don't recall there ever being a get started box for, you know, the Daughters of
Cain.
They
actually did.
Okay.
It was called, I believe it was called the Coven of Blood.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right.
And
okay.
Then,
yeah.
But
you.
They got rid of it.
Yep, they did. But I think that's why you don't see a lot of Well, I think this just like the Fire Slayers. I think this army, you know, is just like that. As far as I think, for a lot of people, it's a very expensive army to put on the table.
Well, yeah, and they stick it to you because you can only get the Hag Queen if you buy the Cauldron of Blood box set. So if I want to have three Hag Queen models, I literally have to buy $300 worth of cauldrons. That's ridiculous. Now, I was lucky. I was able to get some unbuilt, still on the sprue, off of eBay when I was building my army. So I was very fortunate. But I can't imagine some guy, you know, going out there saying, okay, so now I got to spend, you know, I have to buy another two cauldrons, which I'm not going to use, just so I can get one little model in the box set. I think GW needs to come up with a Hag Queen. But it's the same problem that the Fire Slayers have. The Fire Slayers, all their characters are in that starter box set, like the Rune Lord.
Yeah.
And the Rune Smith, for that matter, I believe.
Right. Well, like I said, we got some other Elven armies we're going to be getting onto. Hey, I hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live experience and the show. If you want to support the show, please like and subscribe on YouTube and follow us on our podcast. This way, you'll be alerted when we post new content. If you'd like to support Grimdark Live further, head over to grimdarklive.com, get a t-shirt, dice, or there's Patreon, which makes our show possible, keeps our mics on and the lights buzzing. Big thanks to everyone, past, present, and future, who have supported Grimdark Live. We do this because of all of you, and of course, we will continue doing this for as long as we can. Okay. You guys ready for more Grimdark Live? Let's get back to the show. Moving on to our next Elven army, and we could talk about Daughters of Cain all day. I love that army. But moving on to our next Elven army is the Idoneth Deepkin, which might be, in my opinion, game to game right now, probably the best of the three current Elven armies now, because again, your build that you had was very particular, and it's not, I don't think, Steve, the way that you played your Daughters of Cain, I don't really see that very, very popular in the community, but I think game to game, this might be currently, in my opinion, the best of the current Elven armies now. And let's see
I totally agree with the ability of Volturnos.
Yes.
The way he can take those attacks and store them up as Jessica does in our group.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Store them up until the Alpha Strike. And then when the Alpha Strike comes, they release all those attacks with those command abilities.
Yep. Yep.
It's beyond insane.
It is. But the Idoneth Deepkin are sitting in a better spot than the Daughters of Cain with a representation of over 4%, but a lesser win percentage at 52.2%. So this is what's interesting. They're not as successful overall in major GTs and GTs as the Daughters of Cain, but they're represented by over 2% more. And my
that
thoughts,
makes sense to me.
Yeah, my thoughts on this army. I mean, I think the reason why they're popular and they're kind of holding their popularity, because let's face it, the Daughters of Cain kind of slumped off a little bit. They were real popular, and then only fanatics like yourself and one of our gaming buddies, Dustin, really stuck with them. But I think these things have stood the test of time because they're basically just this soul hunting pirates riding sea monsters. You know, because if you really love an army built around speed, as we talked about before, and some real shenanigans, which this army is chock tall full of.
They are, in my opinion, the best cavalry army in the game.
Right. I would say that. Yeah.
I guarantee you that if you put these Idoneth Deepkin into the hands of someone like Jessica or our buddy Rob, if you are not careful, they will put your lights out in one turn.
Exactly. Yeah, and I agree with that.
And you better know that when you get into a battle with eels, especially the ones with the lightning, with the, you know, the biovoltaic blast.
Right, right.
You better be real careful about getting lazy in any game with an Idoneth player.
Well, you're gonna know you're in a fight.
Oh, it's more than that. An Idoneth player is a special kind of player, in my opinion.
I agree.
They know their armies inside and out. And most good gamers do. But there's something about an Idoneth player that they have played those armies so much. They know when to alpha strike. They know where to hit you. They know how to hit you, and they have the tools to do it.
Yeah, I mean,
and
go ahead.
Not every army provides you with those tools. But
no,
the Eidnit have everything they need to take your lights and put them out.
And you know what's interesting is comparatively to an Eidnith player, we talked very favorably in almost the same tone about Tzeentch players back when we were talking about the Tzeentch armies.
Yep.
You know, and of course, look at the Disciples of Tzeentch. They're currently number one with a 66.3% win, but that's for another show.
Sure.
But again, going back to the shenanigans, so this is why I would say another reason why I think that this army is better than the Daughters of Cain, or really the best out of the group of elven armies we're going to be talking about, because of their shenanigans. You know, there are army builds out there where your whole army can start off of the board. You know, for instance, if you were to take, and I believe it's called the Brimdar Enclave with two Soul Scryers, each Soul Scryer can take three units with them. Basically, your whole army can start off the board. And this can have the whole army deep strike without the need to, you know, place at least one unit on the board when you set up, and just pure shenanigans. And this plays into that crafty player that you and I were just talking about, as far as, you know, the Tzeentch type player, that type of player, I think.
Yeah, I do believe that Eidnith players are the Tzeentch players of order, if that makes any sense.
It does. It makes perfect sense.
They are the kind of players that because they know that the only way their army can be successful is to base it around that alpha strike. And so they have so many tricks and shenanigans. Like, for instance, our buddy Rob, he has a Tide Caster. He can pull the tides back to turn two and do the alpha strike on turn two.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's
and
right.
And just forget it. Your whole army's going to be gone.
Well,
you better have.
Yeah.
The only thing, in my opinion, that can survive that alpha strike are three units.
Okay.
And we all know what those three units have. It's called a ward save.
Yeah. Phoenix Guard, Trogoths.
Players, Rock Gut Trogoths, right?
Yeah.
And of course, I think we all know what our last one is, Daughters of Cain, because they have the again and again save.
Right. That damn again and again. That's
damn
like,
again
that like
and again.
Brings me back to like Nom, like flashbacks or
you know,
something.
Don't tell me, oh, I'm dead. They got a six up save. You know what? If I'm talking a five up or a four plus ward save, which you have a real chance of saving, you know, at least. So
yeah,
if you get hammered with that alpha strike, you better be one of those three units,
right,
or you're going to be disappearing off the table quick.
So Steve, I want to bring something up here to you. I want to throw this out there, because this is sure. this might you know, leave you with a little bit of a non flashback. You ready for this one?
I'm listening.
Let's start with the turtle. What's your take on this particular unit, the turtle? I mean, I personally like the turtle.
I love the turtle. I would have, if I played Eidnith Deepkin just for the goof, I'd have four of them in my army because I love
funny.
Turtles so much. But yeah, and Jessica she turns that turtle into like apocalypse turtle.
That you almost, I think you went outside, you know, of the gaming store that day. I think you went outside, you shed a tear, you cried a little bit. That turtle really, really did some damage to you.
I was laughing. I thought it was great. We had a turtle that came up and did six mortal wounds and ate a whole troll.
Yep. Bit him right in half. But, you know, more so than the turtles just basically being a one reptile wrecking crew. I found the turtle.
But that's awesome. No one ever uses them. Jessica is the first one that we've ever seen that uses them.
That's right. Yeah. Even our buddy Rob, who's you know.
Yeah, Rob doesn't use them. He's an EO guy.
Yeah, he is. But I found the turtle, moreover, to be a good distraction. You know, and I'm going to kind of talk about the game against you and the game. Sure. Well, I guess all three games we can reference were against you, really. I mean, inadvertently, whether it be through a 1v1 or a team game, right? But In watching the game even last week at last week's War Meet, I found the turtle, like I said, was a good distraction. And, you know, I've heard also that the sharks in bigger units are awesome, and also, you know, cheaper points now.
Well,
but the turtle, I think, can be a good option depending on your list, but it's definitely more situational, I would say, than the sharks.
Here's where I see the turtle having trouble.
Okay.
Turtle gets charged, he's dead.
Right.
It was fortuitous for Jess that she was able to charge that six-man troll unit when she did with that turtle. If those trolls would have charged the turtle with the rend of two, they probably would have knocked that turtle down in one round of combat. But if that thing gets you first, if it jumps on you first, you're in trouble. Now, where that turtle's going to run into trouble is against any unit that causes mortal wounds.
True.
So, like, the snakes would love to fight that turtle. The fire slayers with the flame strike poles would love to fight the turtle.
Chargoffs.
Anything that can cause mortal wounds.
Bulgors.
Even great swords. I mean, yeah, right. Great swords. Yeah. I mean, if they can get the six.
Right.
So you really have to be careful where you place him. And Jess did a great job with the turtle. I mean, in all the games that where she uses that turtle, she always is able to use it effectively. Now, she ran into a little bit trouble with Justin's spiders because in that one game, that last game we played, because the spiders have the mortal wound attack with their poison. And so she dropped.
Right.
So, it's placement. But if you're fighting an entire army, like the snakes that have mortal wounds,
right,
you're going to be in trouble.
You very well could be. And you know what's interesting about this army that I've always found is kind of like from my 5,000-foot view of the army, is there aren't a ton of options for building, I would say, diverse armies, since the Idoneth Deepkin model line consists really of only 8 leaders and 5 units with only one, I guess, unconditional battle line and Behemoth.
Yeah, but, I mean, you would be a fool if you played anything other than the Eels for the Idoneth army.
Yeah.
That's like, for me, and I'm just talking my own, you know, personal preferences.
Right.
For me, it would be like me playing Daughters of Cain and not using the snakes.
True. True.
It would just, it's idiotic.
But I think the enclaves kind of save this army a little bit. They've got great enclaves, and I think your army is going to perform a bit differently and allows, how do I want to put this? It allows for small but not insignificant level of specialization. I think
Hagnar is for the Daughters of Cain. It's what makes the Daughters of Cain army work.
But I don't know. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, just like the Enclaves do for the Idoneth.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure, though. I think for me, and maybe this is my limited point of view, but I don't think they have a bad Enclave in the book. Like in my Beast of Chaos, there's a herd that I don't really ever play. You know, but I think you could play any one of the Enclaves in this book and be pretty darn successful, I think. But that's...
Now, let's hop in the Wayback Machine.
Okay, let's do it.
Do you remember when the Idoneth Deepkin were released and every single person was poo-pooing this book?
Oh, yeah.
As if it were the worst book ever written.
Yeah, I think I might have been one of them at first.
But what's so funny about that is that in just a very short period of time, people got a hold of that book, found the special sauce, and now that army is a stone cold killer. Like, you, right, anyone who runs into Idoneth at a tournament, unless they've got like a fire slayers with the 4+ ward save, they're crapping in their pants.
Well,
they know they're in for a game.
I got to tell you, I know firsthand what it's like to get your lights taken out by this army. I mean, it was Adepticon last year. It was game 3, day 1, and my game was over. I was playing Beastclaw Raiders. Now, mind you, at that time, they weren't a very good army, but I was running the whole, you know, dirty snowball list. I had 4 Snuffleupagus. I had a 60 Nobblers, and I thought I had a pretty good chance, you know, because back then the Thunder Tusks had that automatic 6 mortal wounds apiece with the dirty snowball. The game was over at the end of turn 1.
Yep.
I absolutely got lit up, and there wasn't a damn thing I could do about it.
Nope. And what makes the Idoneth so devastating.
Yeah.
You have no time to set up your defenses.
Right.
You're done on turn 1. if you're not prepared.
Right. So how about this? We're going to go back to this question I asked about the Daughters of Cain. What about allied units? Is there anything, any allies that
nope.
this unit? Really? So this is another one.
I take that back.
Okay.
You could take in a Knight in Cantor to do the Thanos snap on any spell.
What about Daughters of Cain?
One shot wonder.
What about Daughters of Cain?
No, Daughters don't need anything.
No, but I mean, good. As an ally unit to this army.
No, you don't need it. The Eidneth are strong enough on their own. They don't need Daughter units, and the Daughters
really?
Don't need Eidneth units.
Okay, I would always
think those armies run just fine on their own.
I would always think that if I were going to do that, and it's probably because I love this unit, but to ally in a unit of some cheap and expendable, you know, 5-unit of harpies that can deep strike in and help block shots for the rest of your army via, you know, Forgotten Nightmares or something like that.
I wouldn't waste the points on them. I would. If
really?
I played Eidneth Deepkin, I'd play it exactly like Rob plays it, and exactly like Jessica plays it.
Okay,
I'd
eels and turtles.
I'd have Volturnos, I'd have the turtles, I'd have the eels.
Yeah, all right. Well, I mean, like I said, the proof is in the pudding there, man. Those two are beaten, including you. You've been getting the crap kicked out of you. Well, I guess...
won the last game.
That's right, yeah. So what do you think are some drawbacks to this army? Are there any?
Yes. They, if they don't do what they need to do on the Alpha Strike, and this has been Rob's Achilles heel against my trolls. Once you come in for that Alpha Strike, if you don't do what you need to do, you're dead, because
right.
those trolls will strike back. And they will eliminate. I mean, I wiped out an entire unit of 6 eels in one round of combat. So you can't afford to come in with the Alpha Strike and not get the job done.
Okay.
That's when Eidneth players fall apart.
All right.
Like,
I like it.
Rob would have trouble going up against like big horde units that.
You said horde, didn't you?
Will you stop?
Sorry.
Like any unit that's like 40, 50, 60 strong, something like that.
Right.
You can come in all day long and do all your crazy Alpha Strike. They don't care. But now once you release that Biovoltaic Blast, that's a once per game thing.
Yeah, one shot wonder.
So,
right.
yeah, so you're screwed.
Right.
So
right.
if you can survive the Alpha Strike against the Eidneth, they're dead because they only have a 4-up save.
Okay.
They don't have a ward save. They have nothing.
Okay.
At least when the trolls are defending against them, and, you know, Rob and I play all the time. That's why I'm bringing them up. When Rob comes in, he attacks me. He knows that if he doesn't kill enough trolls in that 12-man unit, he's dead. He knows it, which is why he'll always try to take them and hit me on the end of the unit so I don't get all those attacks.
Ah, okay. Well,
yeah, I mean, but once again, that's a smart Eidneth player.
The Order world, right?
The Zeech of Order, exactly.
Okay. Wait a minute. What the hell is that? What's going on?
And now, it's time for that part of the show where we present the rules from hell.
Yes, that's right, Grimdark Goons. It's time for the Rules from Hell, where we present the game rules from the past or present of the Warhammer worlds that just sucked.
Here it is, gang. The Warhammer Rule from Hell. Let's face it. Sometimes we, the players, are the hell to the rules. So listen up, you short pants little demons. We're pointing our fingers right back at you for getting the rules wrong and making these rules hell on the tabletop. Rerolls apply before the modifiers. Say, for example, you're on a Hellstrider's aura of -1 to hit. You normally hit on 4s, but have the effect saying you can reroll failed to hit rolls. You can only reroll 1s, 2s, and 3s, but not 4s, even though the 4 will end up missing. It's not considered a failed roll until after modifiers are applied. That's definitely a rule from hell.
And now you know a rule from hell.
All right, let's get back to the show. Well, let's keep rolling. I mean, again, I love the aesthetics of the Eidenith Deepkin, and I love playing against them, man. They're very, very challenging. But now we're going to kind of get into...
Make Turtles great again.
Make Turtles great again. Now we're going to get into the Cities of Sigmar elves. And so here's my first question to you, Steve. Ready? Is the Cities of Sigmar army and meta still an island of misfit toys, as we once said?
No.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I might have misjudged that a little bit.
I know. Well, I've never thought that they were a bad army. I dare anyone to go up against a full Phoenix Guard army with the Phoenixes and tell me that you're going to cakewalk through that army
again. But yeah,
and then give me time to laugh after the Phoenix Guard player has completely annihilated you from the table.
Right. Right. So let's
get
into this.
Because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. So let's get into this then. As far as the Cities of Sigmar goes, you know, I guess let's take a look here on where they stand in the meta currently for cities. You know, Cities of Sigmar is fairly represented with just under 7% of the meta and a 51% matched win percent. So not bad, but outside of Phoenix Temple. Yeah. Outside of the Phoenix Temple and the Phoenixium build. You know, how many of the other elf builds do you think personally played a part in what amounts to be, to be a very respectable showing, a very top respectable showing?
Well, I can tell you this. If I played a Black Guard list, they have a 3x3. Black Guard are tough. Support them with some kind of Hallow Heart list or something. I mean, viable elven army list in that book.
I would totally agree with you. And, you know,
and I think that you'd be a damn fool to throw anything else in there but Phoenix Guard, aside from maybe a cannon or two or something. But I would always put that, if I built that list, it would be with the Phoenix Guard and it would be with those Phoenixes.
Yeah. And that's why I said in the beginning, you know, I don't really see, and it's not really clearly stated, you know, where or how much of the different elven factions played a part in what is again, 11th in the meta, you know, for Cities of Sigmar, a 51% match win rate, you know, but you know, I'm going to again, sound very biased here in my opinion, because I played that army, the Phoenix list. They were a huge portion of my High Elf army back in Warhammer Fantasy Battles. But it just seems to me that the Phoenix Temple are the only elven faction that can competently stand on their own.
I would agree.
And literally be competitive. And that's where I think...
Agree.
Yeah, and that's where I think that people seem to appreciate them after they play them, and that's, they don't really think about them. And I think that hurt the Phoenix Guard a little bit, but that's a whole nother, sidebar. But you know, what's funny,
go ahead. I was just going to say what's holding the Phoenix Guard back is that they are older models,
mm-hmm.
And people want to play newer models in a new game. They don't want to go back to playing old 8th edition models, you know, in an old game,
mm-hmm.
But what still makes them relevant is that they still have their phenomenal fighting ability.
Right.
They still have their 4+ ward save.
Right.
And that army is competitive against anything out there right now with that after save.
Yeah. And I'm going to touch on this. I'm going to touch on 2 points here. I'm going to come back to your point, but I'm going to touch on the first one here. I think the reason why the army isn't more widely represented, and what I'm here talking about, folks, is the Phoenix Temple or the Phoenixium build. And why that elven army isn't more widely represented in the gaming community is money cost, a lot like the Daughters of Cain. I think that these are very expensive. And let me just take you down a road here of what I mean. And this is going to tie back into your point, Steve, that you just made. Take the Phoenixium battalion build. You know, to have an all Phoenix Temple army, this would be a player's cheapest investment because of the battalion. It might be expensive at, you know, say $45 US for a box of 10 models of Phoenix Guard, but you can field so much with Phoenix Guard. Take a MSU or as blocks of 30 for one of the game's, I'm going to probably say, best battle lines. For the Phoenixium, you can take them as MSU, bring two Frost or Flameheart Phoenixes, and one anointed on foot for your dispel and your unbinds. Use your command ability to make your front unit of 10 fight again before they die, and then the general gets buffed up if any models die. Screen off the map and board control with these, you know, basically these murder elves. They've always been that way. That's a boss list right there. And that's a championship list. And you've heard us talk about on Grimdark Live, you know, what do we think the range best out of 10 is? I would say that a Phoenix Temple list, all Phoenix Guard list, is a 9 out of 10 wins out of 10. And I would literally say that they've got, these units have reach at 2 inches with their halberds. They have rend -1. They have a 4+ armor save and a 4+ ward save. But to me, I just do not see taking any other elves, referencing Cities of Sigmar here, folks. I don't see taking any other elves at all. I mean, heck, if you wanted to, take a battle mage if you see fit. But this army doesn't even really need that. The anointed can dispel, and the frost and fire phoenixes get buffs on those spells. So that's my 2 cents in a tin can on that one, Steve.
No, I think you're right. I think the Phoenix Guard are the most viable elven list in that book.
Yeah. I that's where I'm often curious to wonder, you know, what part of the elves most likely Phoenix Temple did they play? Because let's break all this down. We're kind of wrapping up our talk here with the pointy ears. And this has been a great conversation, hasn't it been?
Sure has been.
I've really enjoyed this one. I mean, you know, because it kind of took me down memory lane here. It really made me appreciate my old high elves and boy, I really hope they bring back the grandeur that I used to love about high elves. And that's probably why I'm a little more biased towards the Phoenix Temple, because they kind of take me back to that time and place that I really appreciated and really was really into the elves. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not cheating on my Beastie Boys here. But there's something special about that army in my heart still. But let's recap. Let's recap where the elves currently stand in the meta. So,
sure.
Daughters of Cain are sitting at fourth with a 57% match win percentage. Idoneth Deepkin are sitting at ninth with a 52% match win percentage. And Cities of Sigmar are sitting at 11th with a 51% match win percent. And albeit, again, unknown what elves were represented here. But that's two elven factions currently in the top 10.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
And damn good ones, too.
And damn good ones. And that's the... I think that's the thing that people, I think that's the takeaway. You know, I mean, you can pick up any one of these units and for the most part, you're going to be successful. I would say, okay, let me ask you this as a particular question.
Sure.
How well, if you could think of your best Idoneth Deepkin army, 2000 points. If you could think of your best Daughters of Cain army, 2000 points. If you could think of your best, Phoenix Temple list, 2000 points. Who wins? Who's in first, second, and third place? Gaming against each other.
Daughters, Idoneth, and Cities.
Okay, so you think the Phoenix Temple would be third out of that competitive list?
But that's kind of a hard question too, because they're all such phenomenal lists. But I think that the Daughters edge out the Idoneth because of the ward save and the again and again. The after save. Yeah.
Right. You
know,
right.
People might know. And then I think the Phoenix Guard survive a little bit longer because of the 4+ ward save. They're going to run into trouble because they only have one wound.
Okay.
So yeah. I think that it's Daughters, Idoneth, and Cities in that order.
Interesting. Okay. All right. You know, as I've said before, I'll buy that for a dollar. I like the way you put that. I mean,
but it really depends on the general. It really depends on who's the guy behind that army.
Isn't that what we've always said?
Yes,
is it,
it is
it the army or the general? So yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's where we're at right there.
Hey gang, I really hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live show so far. Thanks for being with us. But before we get to the question of the day, I want to ask you to head over to grimdarklive.com to enter the Nerd Bunker by becoming a supporter of the show on Patreon. There are 6 different levels to fit the support you may be interested in, and all provide special benefits and services to our members. So please head over to GrimdarkLive.com and become a patron of the show. And while you're on GrimdarkLive.com, you should know that Grimdark Live isn't just there for entertainment. We're a full-time miniatures assembly and painting service. We have 3 different levels that we currently paint to, and we provide free quotes. So let us know if you have something you need painted, and we'll get it done for you. And if Patreon or painting isn't something you're ready to do at this time, we totally understand. And thank you for spending time with us here on Grimdark Live. So with that said, let's get to the question of the day.
That's a good segue into our question of the day. But good conversation on the elves there, Steve. I really appreciated
sure was.
That one.
Yeah, that was
a good one. So here it is. Question of the day. You ready?
I'm listening.
Are we realistic in our expectations for armies that we are anticipating, or are we ultimately setting ourselves up for disappointment?
I think that most people set themselves up for disappointment. An army is never going to be what you want it to be. I know this is going to come for me with the vampires. They're not going to be what I want them to be, but they're going to be what they are. And I'm going to learn to love them in their new and in their own way. And you either accept that and deal with it and love the army for what it is now, or you move on and play something else. It's just that simple.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, I got to agree with that. I think a lot of times, you know, we've seen it before. Every time a new army comes out, the one that comes to mind off the top of my head was the Beast of Chaos. When that army came out, I think at our local GW store, the manager there said it was one of the best-selling armies he had ever seen. People were just buying that off the shelves, you know, like crap through a tin horn. And 3 months later, you know, I think people forgot, like elves, like our topic tonight, like elves, Beast of Chaos units, gores and bestigors, they're very unforgiving. You know, they hit hard but fall easy, especially bull gores. And I think people in their mind, you know, like the question of the day states, you know, they had a different expectation, their imagination of what the army was going to be. And when, of course, the army didn't win for them and it got tough, boy, you saw a lot of Beast of Chaos stuff go up on eBay.
Almost immediately.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think that's a fair question. And I think it's one that every gamer really should ponder. I mean, what are your real expectations for that army, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that the vampires are not going to be what I want them to be, but I'm just going to be happy with what they are, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, that's. I'll tell you what. You'll probably be a lot happier that way.
I will, and I think that. Yeah. I mean, you know, all joking aside, I think that you will be more contented if you're willing to acquiesce to the new, you know, to the new rules and the new aesthetic that is being presented.
Right. Right. Well, I'll tell you what, good answers and a lot to ponder. And this has been such a great show. I'm almost kind of upset to ask you, man, what are your closing thoughts here on tonight's show?
Okay. Well, you know, keeping a gaming group growing is never an easy thing to do. As you and I both know, you're constantly trying, you know, to keep a group together with war meets, mini tournaments, you know, your social events, etc. You know, but inevitably you reach a slow period where your group settles in and maybe remains constant for a while. So here's some ideas on how to keep the gaming group during these slower periods, you know, growing. First, you know, you want to have a diverse group of armies to play. You know, you and I often say that, you know, each player should always have at least 2 armies to play. The reason for this is that, you know, your buddies are not always going to want to play your goofy Trogoth army or your goofy Nobbler army or even your goofy, you know, Eidneth army all the time. Now, you know, this is not to say that you can't play your favorite army, but it does mean that you're going to want to change it up every once in a while just to keep the group interesting. You know, boredom can be the worst killer of any gaming group. People like a variety of armies to challenge their skills against. You know, so if they're always playing, you know, some guy's goofy Trogoth army, they're not developing their skills that they need as a player to play against a broad range of of different battle tomes that are out there. So, you know, make a conscious effort to have an additional army on hand and switch to that choice every couple weeks. Secondly, you know, make sure that you have a secondary choice that is from a different alliance. And most importantly, make sure it's painted. A group that respects itself and others always showcases its talent. You know, whether you're a beginner, average, expert, you'll always be respected more when you honor the whole hobby. And I think lastly, always be a group that's willing to let newcomers enter the fold. We gain nothing by being xenophobic isolationists that only allow our kind of people in the group. The strength of any good group is made up of a diverse cast of characters, you know, that all enrich the group with their unique life experiences and approaches to the game. So keep the doors open and the air fresh and clean. And that's my closing thought.
And that was a good one. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And that's, and folks, that's another great show.
Grimdark Live, I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice-chucking, glue-sniffing gamer goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms.